In today's readings, we have two of the instances of theophanies in sacred scripture. A theophany is a visible, tangible, audible display by which God reveals himself to man. The word comes from two ancient Greek terms that mean God and appearance. It describes a direct, temporary divine encounter rather than a permanent state or regular communication. We actually had an example of one of the spectacular theophanies in the gospel earlier this week on the Feast of the Transfiguration, where Jesus revealed his divine nature and appearance to Peter, James, and John on Mount Tabor. In today's verse reading from the first book of Kings, we see God commanding Elijah to stand on the mountain and await his passing by. We heard that Elijah experienced an earthquake, a rock-crushing wind, and the fire, but the Lord was not in any of these. But when Elijah heard the tiny whispering sound or the still small voice, he hid his face in his cloak. Clearly, Elijah is realizing that the Lord was present, and maybe he remembered what Moses did in his theophany with the Lord in the burning bush, who also hid his face as he was afraid to look at God. Now today, our first reading ends at this point. But if I continued with the passage, we would have heard the Lord as Elijah did speaking to him, giving him instructions on what the Lord wanted him to do. Elijah was obedient to the Lord and carried out his will, which he discerned in this encounter with the Lord God. Now, in our reading from Matthew's gospel today, we see a very different encounter with the Lord. This story of Jesus walking on the water is no doubt very familiar to us. But one of the dangers about something so familiar is that we don't closely examine the details, and there's a lot going on here. Now, let's take a look at some of those elements. Where exactly, for example, does this take place on the Sea of Galilee? Well, we don't know the exact location, but we do know that the Sea of Galilee to this day is not a small lake. It is about 7 miles wide at its widest point, and it was the beating heart of Galilee. It was a place of fishing and of industry, and the disciples knew it well. And when they're in their boat, and this is important, the first thing you notice is that they are not right next to the shore. It says they are a few miles distant from the land. Now, in John's account of this miracle, he actually says they are about 4 miles from the shore. Matthew says just a few miles, but the point is that they are not next to the shore. There have been skeptics talking about this miracle who make the claim that the disciples saw Jesus walking on the bank, or something like he was walking on the water, but he was actually walking on a sandbar near the shore, and they assumed he was walking on the water. No, they were in the middle of the lake, and it is in the middle of the night. And by the way, the disciples were experienced fishermen, so I think they know the difference between walking on the water and walking on a sandbar. The text is very clear that they are in the middle of the water. They are far from the shore. Also, notice the time. It is the fourth watch of the night. So this is in the middle of the night, sometime between 3 o'clock and 6 a.m. So most of us wouldn't get on a boat and be out in the middle of the night. But remember, for the apostles, they were pretty used to this, because as professional fishermen, it was actually customary to fish at night. We see that in the Gospel of John, that they spent all night fishing and they don't catch anything. So they are traveling in the dark of night, something they are pretty used to doing. What they are not used to, however, is being on the water at this time of night in the middle of the lake and seeing a man walking out toward them, walking on the waves of the sea. And that is what Jesus does here in this account. He comes to them walking on the water on top of the sea. Now, when they experience this, their first reaction, as we heard, is fear, and they assume it is a ghost. That is a pretty interesting point, as it shows apparently at least some of the disciples believed in ghosts. You can also translate this as spirit, of course. They don't think that this is a normal human being coming to them on water. Jesus says something very interesting. He says, "Take courage, it is I. Do not be afraid." Now let's pause here for a second. This is a clue to us that we should characterize this account of Jesus walking on the water as a theophany. A theophany, as I mentioned, is an appearance of God. It is where God reveals his power, glory, and presence to the people on earth. And one of the things we will see over and over again in other accounts of theophanies in the Bible is that people are always afraid. When they see God, they are afraid, and God's response to their fear is often to relieve it, saying, "Be calm, don't be afraid." And then to speak to them, to give them some important message. Jesus also says something more here. He said, "It is I." Now, in the original Greek, this is ego eimi, which also has been translated as "I am." You no doubt remember, as the apostles would, and sure to remember, that when Moses, in his encounter with God, asked, "What name should I tell the Israelites when they ask me your name?" God replied to Moses, "I am who I am." Then he added, "This is what you will tell the Israelites, I am has sent me to you." Now, another element to remember this incident of him walking on the water took place directly after Jesus had just fed the 5,000 with 5 loaves and 2 fish. So they had witnessed his miraculous power. So after hearing that it is Jesus, Peter has enough faith to say, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." Now, I don't know if it's just me, but I have to say, Peter always impresses me here. He goes from thinking that the figure on the water is a ghost to thinking it is Jesus, then asking, like he still had some doubt, "If it is you," in just a matter of moments. Then he does what few people would likely do, step out of a boat in the middle of a good-sized lake, meaning that it is deep water there, and expecting to walk on the water. Then he proceeds to walk toward Jesus, meaning he probably gets several strides in before realizing how strong the wind is. I must admit, always kind of hope and root for Peter not to take his eyes off Jesus. But then we see in his very human nature, distraction and doubt creep in. And he looks away into the wind and waves and begins to sink. Peter then, having given in to distraction, taking his eyes off Jesus, having given in to doubt, now gives in to fear, yelling out, "Lord, save me." Despite this last show of a little faith that Jesus could save him, the Lord doesn't say, "I am quite pleased with your faith, even though it failed. After this first minute, good for you for trying." Instead, the Lord, knowing of what he has in mind for Peter, holds him to a higher standard and says, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" It's interesting, when Jesus and Peter get into the boat, the others who witnessed this episode show Jesus how they are impressed and in awe of all of this by saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Of course, we know this show of faith on their part also will be short-lived, as when Jesus is arrested and crucified, they will not even show even the slightest courage to follow Jesus while he is being taken away by the authorities, the way Peter does. When we reflect on this gospel account and the reading about Elijah and trying to apply them to our lives, do we think about how do we find God in the storms and struggles of our lives, in the trials we encounter, and try to do His will? In each of these cases, the Lord makes Himself present amid frightening circumstances, heavy winds, high waves, fire, and an earthquake. The other disciples are too terrified to even emulate Peter here in asking to come to the Lord and get out of the security of the boat. Would we be able to do anything different? This gospel account is a revelation of Jesus' divine identity, as only God can tread across the crest of the sea, ruling the raging waters. The words of assurance that Jesus spoke, "I am," are the words God used to identify Himself to Moses. But even that doesn't prevent Peter from being so overcome with fear to imitate his Lord. His fears, Jesus tells him, are a sign of his lack of faith. And so it is with us. Our fears make us doubt, make it difficult to see His glory dwelling in our midst. Yet we should know, as we sing in one of today's responsorial psalm verses, that near indeed is His salvation to those who fear Him, glory dwelling in our land. We must trust that He whispers to us in the trials of our lives, as He did to Elijah, and that He who has called us to walk along the way of His steps will save us whenever we begin to sink. That's what it's like for each of us in the Christian discipleship, again and again. The moment when we are most strongly tempted to give up is probably the moment when help is, if we knew it, just a step away. So it's likely that Matthew expects his readers to hear this story in terms of their own journey of faith and have their own struggles with doubt. There might have been or will be times when Jesus asks us to do what seems impossible. How can we even begin to do the task that He's called us to do? How can we even think of doing without that sin which we have been asked to give up or avoid? How can we really develop a serious habit of prayer when we're so busy, hurting so much, tired, or so disorganized? Of course, if like Peter, we look at the waves being lashed by the wind, we will conclude that it is indeed impossible. What we are called to do, it is so basic and obvious and so hard to do in practice, though, is to keep our eyes fixed on Jesus and our ears open for His encouragement, even if it does contain some rebuke as well. Our minds and hearts must be ready and open to accept and do what He says, even if it seems crazy at the time. But most of all, we need to trust Him, know Him, and develop our relationship with Him so that our wills can be surrendered and be combined with His will for us, and that we try to love Him as He always loves us.